Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Now, the John Rooney Conversation on KMOX. Sponsored by Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance. And if you're a Missourian, we're for you.
The Cardinals would love to turn that leadoff hit by pitch into another run and make life a little easier for Helsley.
Just get one more. I mean, that's – I don't want to be greedy. I just want one more.
Well, how about three more with one big swing here?
All right, I'll be greedy.
The pitch. A swing, and there's a high fly ball. Right center field. Hit deep to the wall. We're greedy. It's a gunner. A home run for Victor Scott. A three-run shot, and there's more breathing room for the Cardinals in the ninth inning.
Well, how about that? Cardinals sweep a doubleheader yesterday in Cincinnati, outscoring their opponent 15-1. So that was a good day for the Cardinals, who needed a couple of wins on the road, and they finally got them. We go to the guest line here just after 10 o'clock on 104.1 FM KMOX. John Rooney, the voice you just heard, and that is as excited as I've heard him in a long time, John.
Mm-hmm. So I'm a guest now.
Well, yeah. Well, okay, you're a regular contributor. You are a part of the show. You're a friend of the show.
So it should be the regular contributors line.
Well, everybody who's on this line is a guest.
I guessed so.
But you're a special guest. Not all guests are equal.
Yeah, you're a special guest, John. Yeah.
Yes, in fact, we ride the special bus on trips. Yes, we have a third bus, and one night the bus had special on it, so we all took a picture, the broadcasters and media relations, and we took a picture in front of the bus, the special bus. So, yes, we are special.
You're special to us.
Well, thank you.
Doesn't that help? So how about that that ninth inning?
What a day, huh? What a day.
A great day, but let's start with that game one, that ninth inning.
Well, frustrating. Very frustrating for the first eight innings to have just one run and hit the ball as hard as they hit it, lining into double plays or just having one thing after another go the other way. And Oliver getting kicked out of the game. He wanted to go a whole series here in Cincinnati without being kicked out and just didn't happen. And I think he got kicked out to keep somebody on his bench from getting the heave-ho, is what happened when he jumped over the railing. Though that jump over the railing, I'd have to give that a 10-5, not a 10. That was pretty good. But if he hit his foot on the top of the railing, that would have been an ugly video, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's risky. Like, you got to own that jump, because otherwise, like you said, John, then it goes viral for all the wrong reasons.
I'm telling you what, he jumped over that thing like he had a spring on his chair, and it was pretty good, but then the team responded after that, and with two outs, Victor Scott got a pitch he could handle. Now, Alexis Diaz has been sent to AAA. He's having some issues, and I'm not sure he's 100%, because we've seen him when he's good, and he's tough to deal with when he's on his game.
You know, we're talking about the ejection. We had Ollie Marmol. We have him every Tuesday on the Gas House Gang at 12, and toward the end of, I think, 2 weeks ago, the show, one of the listeners asked him if he almost got thrown out. I forgot what game it was, and if he was trying to get thrown out or wanted to.
And since that happened, he's been ejected twice. So I feel like the listeners really wanted him to get ejected, and it finally happened.
Well, it seemed to put a charge into the team, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
It worked. It kept somebody, Descalzo or somebody, on the bench from getting kicked out of the game. And it was at a point in the game where, a very important time, but they weren't getting the calls.
Well, we also saw Mason Wynn make his debut as a number two hitter. That seemed to work out for him and be a little jolt for the Cardinals.
I like the balance in the lineup with Wynn hitting second and moving Contreras down to protect Nolan Arenado, having Wilson bat number five. And under normal circumstances, now Abbott, a left-hander, is pitching today, so Jose Barrero is going to get a start in center field. But with a right-hander pitching tomorrow, Clay Holmes for the Mets, you'll see Scott batting ninth. There's good speed at the bottom of the order and a little pop, as we witnessed yesterday. And then you get to the top of the order with Newt Barr and Wynn to set the table for the middle with Donovan, Arenado, Contreras, and then whoever's DHing after that. I like the balance in the lineup, and let's hope they take off and run with it.
You know, you mentioned Contreras, who, he's been coming around. What have you seen differently from him that he's getting the results now that he wasn't getting in the first couple of weeks of the season?
Well, he's not wildly swinging at pitches out of the zone. He's not expanding the zone the way he was. And I think he was anxious to get something started after being so dominant in spring training. I mean, he hit everything hard in spring training. And then when the season started, then what he was hitting, he was getting fly ball outs, some ground outs, double play balls, and not very much fell for him. But now that he's taking a few more walks, and he's hitting the ball hard from right center to left field, and he's getting his share of contact and good hard contact, I think that's going to pay dividends. Now we need to get Nolan Arenado back on track. Arenado has seen his average take a dip, and he won the game last Saturday with a home run to left field, beating the Milwaukee Brewers. But he's had a rough time in this series, an RBI double on Monday to drive in the only run in the game. They need to get him hot, too. But as we see, Wynn heating up a little bit, Walker's taking better at bats. He hit the ball very hard yesterday, and he's back in there in the lineup against the lefty Abbott today.
You know, John, I really liked this phrase from a coach that said, we don't look at momentum. We don't talk about momentum so much, after these two wins like this, as we talk about trends. I think that's so smart. It's not about momentum. It's about trends with a team and positive trends that you're seeing with the Cardinals team.
Well, that's why I go back when I get ready for a game and I take a look at the last 7 to 10 games to see what a hitter's doing. And I put that down on the card. And that pretty much tells you what you need to know about who's hot, who's not, who you may need to pitch around or be more careful with than the next guy in the lineup, or set up pitching around a guy to get to the next guy in the lineup to help your causes. But I take a look at those recent games, like Lars Newt Barr. He's hitting .320 in his last 7 games, a homer, 4 RBIs. He has a double or two in that mix, and he's getting his share of walks. He's walked 7 times over the last 7 games, and he's doing his part to get on. And he has a record 11 walks for March and April. He extended that with a walk in the second game of the doubleheader last night. And he's doing his job in that regard. And the on-base percentage for Newt Barr over the last 7 games, .469. That tells you that he's starting to heat up again.
Meanwhile, in terms of pitching, at least from the starter's perspective, the Cardinals have been solid this year. Matthew Liberatore getting the start today. And for somebody who was sort of given, before the season started, he was given the leash. They said to him, you're going to go, and, we're going to let you have this spot, and you have an opportunity to succeed and to fail, which is important. And he's really succeeded, John. He's looked really good this year for them.
No, he has the demeanor on the mound right now, like you're taking food off my table. I mean, I belong out here, and I'm going to get you out. And even when he has a rough inning, it's not 4 or 5 runs. It might be 1 or 2. And he's able to limit the damage. But he feels like when he comes to the park, he is going to win. And when a young pitcher gets that kind of thing going behind him, he's fun to watch. And I think the teammates feed off of that, too. But let's not lose what happened in the second game of the doubleheader last night with Gordon Graceffo.
Yeah.
He went the last five innings, picked up his first major league win because they got to about 75 pitches with Mats through four innings, and he had struck out six. So they brought Graceffo in, and I look up on the board, and I see 99 on a fastball. Haven't seen that from him in the past. When he came up last year in spring training, and then he did it again. He had like three, four pitches, 99 miles an hour, and then settled in between 96, 97, 95, in that range the rest of the way. But he had a really hard breaking ball going around 92, throwing a changeup in the 80s. And he went out there with a plan, taking advantage of an opportunity being the 27th man, and really impressed. John Mozeliak is sitting in the booth next to us for these games, and he even put up 99. Wow. We hadn't seen that from him. And last night, he took advantage of the opportunity, and he looks like a guy who might be a great setup man down the road. But right now, the Cardinals need a little depth in starting pitching, and he's starting at AAA. They have McGreevy and Graceffo as a couple of starters they could rely on if they need to dip down there and pick up one or two.
And in terms of the bullpen, there have been some issues this year, at least other than Ryan Helsley, and he's had a lot of, hasn't had a lot of opportunities to get out there and try to save a game because they haven't been in save situations. But as you look at the bullpen over about the last week or so, how well do you think they have done?
I think they've done a lot better job, and I think we're seeing King getting more command, feeling more comfortable, and I tell you, what we've seen out of a couple of the relievers out there has been very good. And of course, Ryan Fernandez was sent down, but Kyle Leahy and King, I think, could throw about every day. And they've been reliable in recent outings, and Leahy's been very reliable ever since spring training. And even before spring training, I think Leahy, what he did last year, impressed enough people that they put him in that role. Phil Maton's done a pretty good job. He's had a couple of hiccups, and every reliever is going to. Helsley has. And Helsley might get into a game today, even with a four-run lead. He might not. But I think just needing the work, I think it's been like 5 days. But they didn't need him yesterday for the doubleheader. And in many ways, I think that's a good thing with the Mets coming up. But by and large, the bullpen's getting better.
So we are 30 minutes away from the pregame show with Tom Ackerman today. The Cardinals will finish their series against the Reds before they come home tomorrow for a game tomorrow. 11:40 first pitch. John Rooney and Ricky Horton on the call today. John, we will talk to you soon.
So glad to be one of your guests today.
Well,
one of our best.
Yeah, your best
guest.
Our
favorite, our most special guest.
It's the best guest appearance I've done all day.
See? Well, guess what? You get to do it again tomorrow during the Gas House Gang at 12:30.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah, I know. I know. We can't wait to have
you. We'll be listening.
And I will be on assignment tomorrow night. Mike Claiborne will be in for me tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
And we'll see how things work out during the day.
You know, that's what Ed Farmer said about me one time when we were doing the pregame show. He said, Chris Ronji is on assignment, but I wasn't. I was late to work.
Well, you were assigned to get there, and you didn't make it.
It's a whole story. I'll tell you about it some other time.
The on assignment has been a joke for years.
It's the best.
But it explains, you know, in other words, if you're here on assignment, he ain't going to be there.
Oh, no.
That's it. Whatever the assignment is, he's not showing up today.
That's right. It. Looking forward to the game today, John. Thank you.
Me too. Let's keep the rain away.
Yep.
10:45 for the pregame show and an 11:40 first pitch from Cincinnati, the Cardinals and the Reds. Coming up on 104.1 FM KMOX, we're going to talk to Major Garrett at 10:25. So make sure you...
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Stay here for that.
With Major Garrett, our weekly conversation with CBS's chief Washington correspondent.
Major is also the host of America Decides on CBS News 24/7. We have the chief Washington correspondent with us now. How's it going, Major Garrett?
Have you seen the news?
Are we talking about which news?
Mike Waltz.
Mike Waltz.
Yeah. All right. So here's a quiz. Name all five. national security advisors who work for President Trump. Go.
Mike Waltz.
Go. Come on. Go.
And
come on now. Come on. Quickly. Five.
Now I'm freaking out.
Fred Buttimer.
I'm freaking out, Major.
We're not good on the spot.
Yeah,
Michael
don't do.
Flynn, H.R. McMaster, John Bolton, Robert O'Brien, and now Mike Waltz.
Yeah. That's a lot,
five
right?
National security advisors in 4 years, 102 days.
So is that it's not unusual for people to leave an administration. Like, I know the press secretary, they're always going through a couple of those at least. This is unusual, though, right?
Hyper unusual. For those in the audience who may not know what the National Security Advisor does, the National Security Council was created as the White House organizing hub for the State Department, the Pentagon, and all the various intelligence agencies. And that person is closest to the president in the West Wing all the time to not only brief the president, but to coalesce the policy for the administration, whoever the president is, and be the touch point when the president is otherwise doing things for the State Department, the intelligence agencies, the Pentagon, and all the key component parts of the national security apparatus. It was created as a Cold War entity to make sure the president had constant eyes on the entire national security apparatus when the president was necessarily doing other things. And to have five in 4 years and 102 days is not only record-breaking, but it goes to a kind of impatience or lack of confidence that the president has in this super important, non-Senate confirmable post. Defense Secretary, Secretary of State, CIA Director, all that stuff goes through the Senate confirmation process. The National Security Advisor doesn't. The National Security Advisor is chosen by the president, and once you're chosen, you're in. So it's really tight to the president and the executive branch. And Mike Waltz is no dummy. He has tremendous experience, battlefield experience, read a couple of books about it, very much on the Trump MAGA world sort of axis of interpretation of the world and world events and Trump policy. He left Congress to do this, and 102 days in, no matter how MAGA he was, he's now unemployed, a MAGA flame out, and out of Congress. That's a pretty sorry state of affairs for him.
So who steps in his place?
Who knows? I mean, seriously.
They also,
according to our reporting, are letting go or dismissing or firing, however you want to, whatever apprentice television show language you want to put it in, getting rid of the deputy national security advisor. So there's nobody right in the queue right behind it. Hegseth is melting down at the Pentagon, firing three people he brought in last week and the week before. So the Pentagon doesn't have senior leadership underneath the defense secretary. There's now no national security advisor or deputy. So, you know, I know we all sort of have defaulted to this belief that only the president matters and only the president deals with things. And to a certain extent, in the Trump presidency, that's true. But this is a level of dysfunction that he has created. Again, this position, it's his choice and his choice alone. Doesn't have to ask any senator about it. Doesn't have to go through any confirmation process. It is linear to his tastes and desires. And five times he hasn't been able to get what he thinks he wants out of this particular position.
Major, to that point about how many people are fired and all of the turnover that we see, there was a lot of, with the voters, a lot of fondness or reminiscing about Trump 1.0. And I'm not sure if that's what voters were expecting in Trump 2.0, but Trump 2.0 is very different. He has a very different set of people around him. Mm-hmm. What are some of the key differences that you see that voters might not realize that Trump 1.0, that's not going to show up?
No, it's not. No, not at all. And that's why this firing of Mike Waltz is so interesting to me. So Trump, the first time around, it was a surprise victory to him. I recount that in my book, Mr. Trump's Wild Ride, what election night was like and how surprised they were, how downcast they were when the polls closed. They were not expecting to win. They thought it was possible, but not probable. And once he did win and became president-elect, they did not have not only a fully formed transition plan, they didn't have a nominally informed transition plan. They started basically from scratch. And when you start from scratch, you're always trying to play catch up. And they didn't know with whom they could create alliances. They didn't know what their own Trumpian approach was going to be. It was kind of evolving. And they didn't know who was really on their side. Lots of people who were close to the Trump campaign from 2016 began calling Republicans who suddenly got on board as post-election Trumpists. They only were Trumpists after he won. So they didn't know who they could trust. And that was always something filtering through how people were hired and then fired the first time around. This time, for 4 years, they have built a cadre of quote-unquote revolutionaries, people who were Trumpists the first time around and became even more hardened Trump loyalists in the 4 years out of power. And through various think tanks that were put up by people funding the Trump organizations, political and otherwise, they got themselves in a very locked arms perspective on a next Trump administration, should there be one. And they're the ones populating this administration now. They're the ones who've written all these executive orders and had them ready to go from day one, coming out in sort of a blitzkrieg fashion. That's different. So Trump has lots of loyalists. Mike Waltz thought he was among that group, thought he had proven himself in the House of Representatives, on the campaign trail, during the transition. He thought he was safe and had established, through all the things he advocated for President Trump when he was out of power in the House of Representatives, that he was in. Nope, he's out. And so that makes you wonder, within this group that thinks that they're all on board and all safe because they're all hardened Trump loyalists, what actually is your job security? And who can knife you in the back and who can make you expendable suddenly? Look, everyone thought in the first 2 weeks after the Signal revelations through the Atlantic magazine that maybe Mike Waltz was going to be out. But then Trump kept involving him in cabinet meetings, kept calling on him, kept referring to him. So I don't know what the ins and outs of this particular dismissal today are about. Everyone had sort of thought he had, Mike Waltz, weathered the storm. And the second Signal revelation was all about Pete Hegseth and sharing military plans with his wife, his personal attorney, and his brother. Everyone thought, well, now the harsh scrutiny is on Hegseth, not Waltz. Well, I don't know if Hegseth is next or not, but now we know that initial hesitancy to fire people, which everyone told us, well, Trump's not going to do it this time around. He's not going to fall for the media narratives and outside pressure. Well, okay, that was false. He did. Waltz is out. Deputy National Security Advisor is out. Who's next? And we're going to play that Washington game now in a very similar way than we did in the first Trump administration, which I didn't expect would start this rapidly.
The U.S. and Ukraine deal, the minerals deal, this mm-hmm. is this a good step forward?
It's a very – well, look, it's a step forward in the sense that what Ukraine needs in any conversation with Russia is a sense that the United States – has a continued interest in its future as a sovereign country. Having a minerals deal with the United States recognizes A, Ukraine's sovereignty, meaning it's not going to be overtaken by Russia, and it has ongoing business interests there. Would the Ukrainians have preferred that this also include in writing security guarantees to back it up? Yes. Did they get them? No. The Trump administration says those are implied. If we have business relationships and we're extracting minerals and we're making money off it, you can be sure under a Trump administration, probably any future one, we're going to militarily protect those economic interests. That's implied. Ukraine right now would like more than implied guarantees on the security front, but it will take what it can get and a recognition of the United States of its ongoing current sovereignty and future sovereignty is a start.
Major Garrett, as always, we appreciate it. Thank you for hanging out with us for a few minutes today, and we'll talk to you Thursday of next week.
It's been a busy day already.
Yeah, folks. Well, get back to work. It's about time.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed, sir.
You've been over there loafing all day.
It's all I do. I've got three hammocks in my office. I just rotate three hammocks.
That's because you're waiting on those couches.
You set an alarm, and the alarm wakes you up so that you can get into the next hammock.
Exactly. That's all I
do. There you go. Thank you, Major.
Bye-bye.
Major Garrett is the chief Washington correspondent for CBS News. His show is America Decides, which you can watch on CBS News 24/7. Hey, congratulations, Dennis in Jerseyville.
Yeah.
Going to go see Alabama on May 25th at the Thunder Ridge Nature Arena in Ridgedale, Missouri. Now, everybody but Dennis lost. That means tomorrow, one more chance to win. We'll give away one more pair of tickets for Alabama tomorrow between 9 and noon. You have to be listening for your chance to win, Amy.
Yep.
You can't win.
No, I can't.
It's against the law, actually.
It is. Hey, can I do a quick update on Bill Belichick's girlfriend, Jordan something?
Yeah, how's she doing?
Jordan Hudson. Well, did you know that within 18 months of meeting Bill Belichick, she suddenly bought an $8 million real estate investment in Boston area and in Cape Cod?
Yes.
So, and you may think, well, maybe she was wealthy to begin with. Well, maybe her father was a fisherman and her mother manages a sex toy shop.
A sex toy shop?
Yes. She manages a sex toy shop.
Hold on. Do you think that's how they met and that's why they didn't want to talk about it?
Oh my gosh.
Bill walked into the sex toy shop?
Oh my gosh. It's in Provincetown.
Do you think that's what happened, maybe?
I do. So anyway, real quick, all of her classmates.
Can we speculate some more?
We can, but listen to this. So her classmates are saying this is totally her. She is very controlling, not a surprise. They tried to interview her mom about the situation, and the New York Post said the mom declined to speak. But one local construction worker who used to cut Belichick's lawn was more than willing to weigh in. It's weird as hell, said 40-year-old Matt Torville.
I bet Matt Torville's he's probably interested. That's what happened, I bet. I bet
Do you
Bill
think
went
they met at the
I
sex
bet
toy
Bill
shop.
Bill went to that store and her mom said, "You would love my daughter.
My daughter. She's 20.
I have somebody for you.
She's 20 years old."
What if that's what happened? Somebody needs
can
to look into this.
Can you shop at a sex toy shop when you're 20? I thought you had to be 21.
No, you can be an adult.
I don't.
So we have to be an adult. Yeah, Frank Ladd. Frank Ladd is like, oh, no, 18. He knows.
Really? If you should have to be 21.
Hey, we got Cardinals baseball coming up here. It is the finale of the series in Cincinnati. We'll be back with you tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Don't worry. And if you missed anything on the show today, the conversation with John Rooney, Major Garrett, Doug Hoy about pharmaceuticals, listen to the podcast on the Odyssey app. Bye.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Friedman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.